This is Marilyn from the Urban Homemaker, and this is our twice a month, usually, phone seminar. And my guests tonight are Maria Atwood and Blair McMorrin. Is that correct pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
And our topic is going to be Maria's DVD and booklet, accompanying booklet called Cook Your Way to Wellness. A little bit of a misnomer because we're not doing a lot of cooking, but we are doing a lot of food prep, aren't we?
We are.
Okay. And we're going to be talking about kefir, fermented veggies, kombucha, beet kvass, bone broth, butter, grains, all, some of the very basic principles of nourishing traditions. And I like the way Maria described nourishing traditions, that it's a great book to read. Don't go and look at recipes to pick out right away. But it's a head-twisting re-education about healthy fats, cholesterol, raw dairy products, and so on. And I love that head-twisting because most of us have never heard of any of this unless we've been reading nourishing traditions and following some of those principles for a period of time. Is very head-twisting, this idea of lacto-fermented foods and eating any kind of produce that we've sat on our counter for a few days to ferment and we didn't can it to kill all the bugs and still live to tell about it. I mean, we just really have to do some head-twisting, I think. I know for myself, when I first started fermenting some veggies, and I'm certainly not an expert, I really had to get up my courage. Because I was thinking, what am I doing? Am I going to get sick or what?
There's really a tendency to think, is this stuff going to kill me or what?
And so we're going to be talking tonight a little bit about raw milk and the health benefits associated with drinking fermented drinks such as beet kvass, kombucha, and kefir, and, you know, making fermented veggies and sauerkraut and salsa and other fermented veggies and all these fermented, lacto-fermented things that, no, most of us probably didn't grow up with unless we had an amazing mother. And we're going to talk about what some of the health benefits might be and how to do it. I have received lots of emails with great questions, so I'm looking forward to asking some of these questions. Some of them I will just incorporate in my introduction or in my remarks. So anyway, as I had mentioned, my guests are Maria, who is the author of the DVD, and then her friend, Blair. They're both chapter leaders of WAPF, which is Weston A. Price Foundation Leaders. And there are chapter leaders all over the country. I'm sure many, maybe some chapter leaders are listening tonight or some people who have a chapter they belong to and know what that is are listening in also. But for those who may never have really heard of what a Weston A. Price Foundation Leader is, why don't you describe that for me?
Blair, you probably, why don't you pick up on that one, because or Christine, because there's a lot of I'm a brand new chapter leader out here in Burlington, Colorado. But
okay. All right, go ahead, Blair.
Well, we sign up. We're volunteer. We try to do outreach, educate people about food. We meet. I don't know. Some people meet once a month. Some people meet every other month or quarterly. Depends on the interest and sometimes the time.
You're available to answer questions, basically, aren't you?
Yeah, we're a resource for finding raw milk or grass-fed beef or pastured eggs. We try to get to know the local farms in the area, and we interview them and find out what they feed their animals, and we keep a list.
Okay. So a great resource. And how do people get in touch with their local chapter leaders?
At the westonaprice.org.
Okay, on the www.westonaprice.
Yeah, or you can go to realmilk.org if you're, and they have a where there to by state.
Okay. All right. All right, so Maria, since you are the author and we're talking quite a bit about your DVD tonight and some of the things you demonstrated and really helped us to understand, I want to thank you for producing the DVD and joining us tonight. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you became interested in nourishing traditions, how you have personally benefited, and maybe why you produced the DVD?
All right. Thank you. Well, I'd first like to thank Marilyn and Duane and everyone that's now joining us. It's a privilege to be here. I think that very originally, I think that I became highly aware of problems when my mother had just a terrible operation that took nearly three-quarters of her stomach because she had acid reflux. And during that time, she nearly died. And for some reason, it did a head-twisting thing on me, and I decided at that point, and I was fairly young then, that I would study foods and why these illnesses like acid reflux should almost take a person's life. So through my lifetime after that, I did try to follow healthy diets, but I really got wrapped up in the soy milk and the heavy grains of the, you know, of the 70s and the 80s, and I was drinking a lot of that stuff, and I just really wasn't feeling well. I just didn't feel well. And there was a point in time that I read an article in of Jen Albrighton, who is a writer, and she's noted much in the journals of Weston A. Price, and she wrote an article on coconut oil. And I literally called her. It was such a fascinating article. And I told her how healthy my diet was, that I didn't eat meat and I didn't drink milk and I didn't eat butter. And she emailed me, she said, well, I'm always a little suspicious of people that don't eat meat and drink milk and that. She said, Sally Fallon will be in Denver in September. This was 2003. And, I don't know how many people group have ever seen Sally Fallon literally on the stage, but it left me literally spellbound. I could not wait to get out of there to run to the first restaurant, whether it was organic or not, and order a ribeye, which I hadn't tasted in years. And it wasn't long after that that I was, you know, searching all over for raw milk. And during that period of time, I had to have spent at least a year and a half on discussion groups, buying books, talking to those that I could, going to the meetings. It was very, very difficult. It was very time-consuming for me to really get, once I heard about the benefits of lactofermentation, I really wanted to get them in my system. But it was very difficult because I had to do so much study, so much research. I had to spend hours and hours on discussion groups and that. And eventually it came to me that wouldn't it be fun if there was something that was a look and see how you do this. And so I had a very good friend that that decided that he would help me do this. And so I took the most basic things, which are kefir, whey, and the things that are in the DVD, and I put it together. And then came the idea that there are so many other questions that need to be answered that you don't have time to do in a DVD. So I wrote the small booklet, Tell Me More, and fortunately I was able to get Blair McMorrin to help me edit that and you know, get the words right. Now, I'm more on the cooking end, and Blair is more on the technical end. So as the questions go, I you know, that's important to note. And so that's how the DVD and
came
the
about.
Were born.
Okay, well, that's a great story. Blair, tell us how you got interested in nourishing traditions and how your family has benefited. Hello? Is Blair there?
Oh, she must have dropped off.
Okay.
I wonder why. I'm not sure. I know she has telephone problems. I don't
okay.
know.
Well, maybe
no, I'm back. I'm back. I'm
oh,
sorry.
You're right. Okay.
I do have phone problems. I started, my dogs got me into this. I had a dog with cancer, and I started researching nutrition because the vet wasn't fixing him. And I switched from, you know, the regular dog food to the raw, and since I learned so much that way on the internet, I started researching human nutrition. We had some health issues in our family, allergies, asthma. I was gaining weight and I didn't know why, and my teeth were falling out, and I kept ending up on the Weston A. Price Foundation website, and the more I read, the more convinced I got that that article, The Skinny on Fats, just floored me.
Oh, it's, yeah, that's definitely mind-boggling or head-twisting, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you find out about saturated fats and what healthy fats are. Okay, well, that's interesting that your health search has both brought you to the same place and you've actually found some answers. Okay, well, let's talk about kefir briefly because there are a lot of questions about that. First of all, what would be some of the health benefits of kefir, Maria?
Well, you know, I'd like to just, I'd like to be able to just say about kefir and about all the other fermentations is that, you know, this is really about lactofermentation. And very briefly, no matter how healthy you're eating now, it doesn't matter what kind of diet you're on and how healthy it is, even the RWAPF diet principles, the one missing element that we find always is, in fact, the lactofermentation or the lactic acid that's created in kefir and beet kvass and in all these other fermented things. So if tonight, if the only thing, absolutely the only reason that you were to even consider buying the DVD or that you get anything out of this is the fact that the lactic acid is a really pivotal thing that has to be in your diet that will, in fact, complement the other foods, because lactofermentation, and I'm just going to just point out four real quick things that lactofermentation does, and the reason and the benefits, as you asked, what are the benefits of lactofermentation or lactic acid? And first of all, lactic acid prevents decay not only in food, but in the bowels. And this is important because we talked just about the scary idea of eating stuff that's sitting out, and Blair will maybe go into that a little bit more, but it does, lactic acid does prevent decay in food, and therefore it preserves that, but it also prevents decay in the bowel. Lactic acid also stimulates the peristaltic movement of the intestines, and you know, we've been so filled up with so much psyllium husk and all kinds of fiber when, in fact, it's probiotics that would stimulate the peristaltic action of the intestines. The third thing is that it assists the circulation of the blood. You wouldn't think that that would be right, but in the book Making Sauerkraut, Klaus Kaufmann talks about that. He actually talks about how it assists in that. And fourth, and a really interesting thing, which I saw on one of the questions about acid reflux, is that lactic acid, it has a very harmonizing effect on the stomach, and it strengthens the acidity of the gastric juice when the production lags, and it reduces the acidity when the production is up. So can you imagine that here is this wonderful, marvelous little thing called lactic acid that's made when you make sauerkraut or kefir or beet kvass, and it's the ultimate it's the ultimate antacid, because if your acid is down in your stomach, it brings it up. If you're producing too much, it reduces it. Well, here's the ultimate, you know, it goes either way. And last but not least is that lactic acid encourages the function of the pancreas, where a lot of the enzymes are made to help us digest our food. And so this in turn stimulates the secretions of all the digestive organs, and it's really especially important for people with diabetes.
Okay, let's
see. That's a little short dissertation on why lactic acid is so critical and why learning how to do lacto-fermented foods are crucial to the rest of your diet.
Well, that's a very powerful statement for me to hear. I mean, it's convicting in many, or not so much convicting, it's just persuasive. It's like, this is like practically a missing link to me. I mean, we don't have to have all the digestive enzymes in the world and, being food combining and other types of regimes. If we are getting sufficient amount of lactic acid, it sounds like, we're going to have good, healthy digestion.
Exactly. That was my quest was, how in the world do I get lactic acid in my system as fast as I can, and not overdoing it, because we really should we don't have to overdo it. But that's the key. That's the main reason. And the DVD does have beautiful other chapters, like the bone broth, like you say, the butter. But the key here is lactofermentation, in my opinion.
Okay. Well, I have to say, and I think that B. kvass is really terrific. We'll get to that. Okay, so we'll just talk briefly then about kefir. Maybe even before we talk about that, in the DVD, you're talking about raw milk right off the bat. And so immediately people are thinking, raw milk, how can I know if it's safe and, you know, whether or not there's harmful bacteria or if it's contaminated? You know, a lot of people are benefiting from raw milk, but, you know, how can we be prudent?
Well, Blair, why don't you, on the technical, why don't you go ahead with that one?
Well, first of all, you do need to be careful. There are two raw milks. There's dirty raw milk and there's clean raw milk. You want milk from grass-fed cows. You want milk from farmers that know what they're doing and they know how to handle the milk and clean it and cool it quickly. But basically, if the cow is healthy and it's fed an appropriate diet, meaning grass or, you know, alfalfa in the winter, and very little grains, if any at all, then the milk is going to be healthy. And, well, handling is the biggest problem. If you've got a healthy cow, after that, you just have to worry about handling. I mean, there are more, the CDC reports more problems with meat and well, recently spinach for E. coli and salmonella incidences than raw milk ever produced.
True.
And if you want to make sure, like, for instance, when I got started, I didn't try to guess. What I did is I went to the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I found local chapters, and I found that we had a local chapter, and it has all the resources. Ours is nourishingconnections.org, and there I immediately found a farm that had been approved, you know, was following the Weston A. Price thing. So there I found many other people that were drinking the raw milk, and it was coming from farms that were truly approved and where the cows were being raised properly and that were clean. So that's a wonderful way to find where you can get raw milk and know it's safe.
Okay. So now, why did you start with kefir in your DVD versus yogurt?
Well, because I think yogurt, everyone is acquainted with yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the stores, and there's already some good yogurt out there that's prepackaged. But kefir, I started out with because literally, as I understand it and what I've read from it, the strains of good bacteria in kefir have not all even been identified by scientists. There's just so many that they can't hardly be identified. So here you're getting, and that's if it's made with good kefir grains. So I felt that it was the most potent thing, something that we're not familiar with, and something that countries like Russia and Turkey and many of those have been drinking for literally eons, and it has some very powerful effects on the system, those that I just mentioned in particular. And people sometimes that cannot tolerate regular raw milk or raw dairy products can and some do tolerate kefir.
Okay, and now I was reading up in Nourishing Traditions just tonight, page 82, and this is from Claude Aubert, Les Almonds Fermes. You know, I won't massacre the French here, but anyway, it's a French book, and he says that the fermentation of milk makes it more assimilable to persons with lactose intolerance.
Yeah.
Because of the lactic acid.
That's my situation, exactly. I cannot drink pasteurized milk, but raw milk is fine.
Well, because lactase is an enzyme that digests lactose or milk sugar, and it's plentiful in raw milk.
Okay.
Yeah.
So people who say that they're lactose intolerant probably would do fine. It would be safe to say that they would probably be fine on raw milk.
Yeah, it's an individual thing. I don't want to say that it absolutely will. It doesn't work for everybody, but it worked for me and my son.
Okay.
And I know that it's worked for other people because I'm on the chat boards and they talk about it. But you just got to try it.
Right. Okay. Well, my understanding, though, is that part of the kefir process with the fermentation actually breaks down that lactose anyway. So if you're lactose intolerant, it shouldn't be an issue because it's already been broken down.
That's right.
Okay, Okay, so now you do mention that it's important to use sterilized jars. Do we have to boil pots of water with our jars?
No, I always wash my jars separate from my other dishes, but I do wash them in the dishwasher. I wash them on, high heat and high dry. And I also use the dishwashing powder that I use is not commercial. I have found the brand Seventh Generation, I believe is the name of it, that is a very, very good product. So that's what I use, but I never use it in any more than the first going round of my dishwasher. I do not fill both cups up so that it's getting two complete rinses. And I've never experienced any other problems with it because it would be too intense a job to try and sterilize them the way we used to, where you have boiling water over them.
Well, in the DVD, you show these terrific, gorgeous kefir grains that are bigger than cauliflower. And so where do you get those?
Well, I first received my kefir grains from just another person at one of the meetings, at one of our chapter meetings. But I think the grains grow beautifully, and it depends a lot, I think, on maybe the temperature of your house, the type of your milk. I'm not sure why my kefir grains grow so beautifully, but they do, but I do make it frequently. I do not let my kefir sit in the refrigerator for weeks at a time. At the very most, I let my kefir sit in there, maybe 3 days, 3-4 days when I take it out. And I think that helps to propagate it quicker. Where the kefir grains are left in the refrigerator, I think it tends to maybe let them grow less quick.
Oh, so they're just being stored.
Yes.
Won't
die, they'll stay for a while, but I think that you get healthier, larger grains when you're, just like anything else, when you're paying attention to them, they produce.
Okay. All right. And
yeah, they feed off the lactose.
Right.
So if they use up the lactose, they don't have nothing more to grow on.
Right.
Okay. All right.
You need to change the milk.
So how do you know how much to, how many kefir grains? Let's not get into that kind of stuff. We have plenty more to cover here. Okay, I could ask a lot of questions, and people are probably thinking about all kinds of things. I did receive a question about when you use kefir in preparing, pancakes or cornbreads or baked goods, does it still have the same health benefits when it's cooked?
Blair, why don't you go ahead with that one?
No, if you heat over 118 degrees, you've killed the bacteria. However, I read an article in Nature magazine that said even these dead bacteria cells, the good bacteria, the immune system recognizes and it stimulates the immune system. You won't have the probiotic activity in the intestine, but you will benefit from it.
Well,
so it's still good to use it. Same with yogurt.
Right, and I think the benefit is that it's changing some of the proteins in the grain. It's neutralizing the phytic acids, and it's, helping break down some of the difficult-to-digest proteins to make it more digestible.
Exactly, yeah. Can I add something about kefir?
Mm-hmm.
Marilyn, you had asked why kefir and not yogurt,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think we quite answered that as far as describing the multitude of good bacteria and yeasts that are in kefir. There's something like 20 probiotic strains, 4 or 5 different strains of yeast, whereas yogurt typically only has 4.
Wow.
4 to 6.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay.
And the other thing I wanted to say is I don't worry about cleanliness. I just wash my jars in the dishwasher along with everything else because I'm so confident. I eat my kefir almost daily. Mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about bad bacteria because I got that good stuff in there to fight.
Right. That's true. Well, how much kefir do you really need to consume to get a probiotic benefit? I mean, are we talking a cup a day or a cup every other day, a couple cups a day? What is a good dose?
Well, you see, the thing of it is that, like Sally talks about in her book, that every meal should have some degree of lactofermentation as a part of it. And so, you know, you may drink a half a cup of kefir in the morning with some raw milk in a smoothie or kefir in any form. But at lunch, you also may have a little cup of beet kvass, I'm sure as you have had. And then at dinner, you might have some of the fermented veggies, you know, that's shown in the DVD, the pickles or the whatever it is that you make. So it's really an intuitive thing, and I think the body is so smart that it just knows how much it should be. So there's really no specific diet type of thing that you have to follow. You just, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I just know I've got to have it, and that's that. You know, I eat as much as I want, and I never seem to overdo it.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. You in the DVD, after you get your kefir made, you make whey, and then of course the whey is used in a lot of other products that we'll talk about before you run out of time, hopefully. And I had called you a couple weeks ago, and I got all excited after I saw the DVD, and then. I didn't have time to make kefir. I saw it in the store, so I thought, okay, I'll just buy this kefir and make whey. Well, the next morning I had maybe a half a cup of whey at the most. And so I thought it might be good to talk about, you know, the whey and what you can expect and why maybe I had a problem there and so on.
Well, as I mentioned, to me, the whey that is made from... And I do not use whey that's been strained from yogurt or some people make whey by letting the milk clabber more or less and it separates and it is whey there. But the most, and I've tried a number of different things, but the whey that I most am successful with and that is the most powerful, that makes the most potent beet kvass and my veggies, has been that comes that's made with a kefir and drained and with the raw milk. So it's apparently the strain and the type of whey that's coming from there has the same identical power, and the many strains that, Blair talked about. So I think that you can get very, very good potent whey, as well as you can get a mediocre, depending on how you use it. And like I said, for me, it's been using the whey that comes from the kefir that just seems to do magic with the rest of the vegetables and things.
Okay, so you're kind of implying an answer to another question that came in earlier that I haven't gotten to, is that the quality of the whey may affect the success and the quality of your fermented product.
I can't say that's anywhere in the book. Maybe you can answer that, Blair, but in my experience, I keep coming back to using the whey that comes from my kefir, the way I show it in the DVD. It just is a powerful substance and it doesn't let me down.
I totally agree. And I read a study that said that kefir whey is the most effective at breaking down phytic acid. I mean, 87% or something like that of the phytic acid was removed with kefir whey compared to 30 to 40% with other types of whey.
Wow.
So kefir whey is the way to go.
Okay. Well, that might be the answer to some of the fermented veggie problems. I think you also mentioned some health benefits of just using whey as...
By itself.
Yeah.
And remember that when we talk about whey, there does not have the powdered whey that you buy in the stores is that isn't a substitute.
Cooked. That's not the same thing.
No, but yes, a whey by itself is a powerful. It's great for the connective tissues of the body, and it's great for digestion. But it's also very good for literally for the muscle. You know how much whey is consumed by athletes. Can you imagine if they saw that and started drinking real whey?
You mean a whey in sports protein drinks and stuff, or
what? That's
hydrolyzed whey and frequently oxidized whey. So you don't want to stay away from anything that's been heat treated.
Okay.
I mean, you do not want to use anything.
Okay, well, let's talk about fermented veggies then, because, you know, I got some mail from somebody who said, I've had great success with mustard, ketchup, sauerkraut, Latin sauerkraut, kimchi, but my cucumbers and pickled beets have been complete failures. So I know the first time I made sauerkraut, it really was with a ton of fear and trepidation. So let's just kind of talk about that briefly, because in the book it says, you know, a fourth a cup of whey per quart of sauerkraut, or an extra tablespoon of salt. So what is the whey doing in the fermented veggies?
Blair, why don't you go ahead with that one?
Well, that's what starts your lacto-fermentation. Right. It's got lactobacillus in it, and it will kickstart that process. The cucumbers and the cabbage and so forth have some of that on the surface of their leaves, but if you add a little whey, you'll make sure that you're giving it an advantage of getting a start over other bacteria that you don't want in there.
Okay.
The salt really starts the preservation, and then the whey takes over.
Okay.
The salt is really just to prevent other bad bacteria from forming. It doesn't like a salty environment. And that will allow the lacto-fermentation to start. It takes a little longer to really get going, but I've had the soggy pickles. I've had those too. I haven't done a lot of them, so I don't know if I can talk to this competently. But I have read that if you stick a grape leaf in with your pickles, that will keep them crisp. What you want is something with tannin, a leaf with tannin, and grape leaves are good with that.
Very interesting. I'm going to try that because I have grape leaves and I didn't have real good luck with my pickles. In fact,
and I have also heard people say don't use whey at all. Just use the salt and the garlic and
dill.
Fire away. If you have a good brine, it should work. And also keep your temperature lower. You don't want it too warm. In the summertime, you know, when you're making pickles, frequently it's a little too hot.
And okay. So maybe you'd have to shorten your fermentation time?
I don't think shorten it so much as keep it cooler at 70, 75 instead of, like, it's up into 80 and 90 degrees. It's too hot.
Okay.
And that's what makes soggy pickles, too.
Okay. Well, she said she had a scummy white stuff that formed on the surface, I assume on the liquid part. Do you know what that is? Is it just bad bacteria?
I've not had that. And you know, sometimes I know that on beet kvass there's this white stuff that forms that's called calm.
Yeah, and it's harmless.
It only happens with beets. Now, pickles, I don't know. Trust your nose. Always trust your nose. And if it doesn't smell good, don't eat it. But generally, the lacto-fermentation prohibits bad bacteria from forming. But okay. I'm not saying it won't happen.
Now, I read somewhere or heard somewhere that you can use some of the juice left over from, say you made a batch of sauerkraut or salsa, if you have some liquid left over, you can use that instead of whey in your next batch.
That would be ideal. That would be better than whey.
That would be
because,
better.
Yeah, you've already got the perfect culture started.
Okay, so that would be a good starter. Okay, that's
uh-huh.
good to know. Now, in the salsa, how do we know when it's ready?
Well, you know, that salsa is such a unique product. Is the longer you let any of those fermented things sit, it seems to be the better they get. And that's particularly the case, I think, with pickles. And I think it's very much the case with okra, because I show in the DVD that fermented okra, and the longer it stays, the better. So I find that after about a week that it's been in the refrigerator, that's when I kind of like to start opening mine.
Okay, but you don't mean sitting on the counter for a week.
Oh, no. No, sitting on the counter, really, I follow Sally Fallon's, you know, dictates on that. When she says 2 or 3 days or 2 days, that's what I do.
Oh, okay. Now, if the temperature drops, because, you know, I told you my house was freezing and somebody else wrote me their house is 62 degrees, we just let it go longer, right? That's going to be safe. I mean, that,
right.
I've been doing that and it's been working fine. It does take about 2 extra days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly found like that beet kvass really is, that stuff is amazing. It's really good.
It's good, isn't it?
In fact,
that salsa is so good. But I eat the salsa right away. It's so good.
Yeah, it vanishes in my household too. I've only
done
it a couple times and, it just goes. And so when you make it, really one jar isn't enough. You should make more.
I agree.
But I just want to tell the audience that when we were talking about having a phone seminar, that I mentioned to you that my wrist was really hurting, and I didn't know if it was arthritis or gout or what, but it really didn't seem to be carpal tunnel because it wasn't the same place. It wasn't on the arm. And so you suggested that I have the beet kvass, and I've been doing that for not even 2 weeks, and I can tell quite an improvement.
That's great.
Yeah, so
good to hear.
I certainly recommend it to anybody. It's very inexpensive, a lot cheaper than a doctor's visit, and just takes minutes to make. It's really simple. What are some of the other health benefits? Is the kvass just basically a good, strong lactic acid source, or what else is good about it?
Well, you know, beet kvass, you know, and Sally pretty much says it in her book. She says that the drink is valuable for its medical qualities, and she says beets are loaded with nutrients, and she says that it's an excellent blood tonic, and it promotes regularity, it aids digestion, and it alkalizes the blood.
Well, that's quite a few things.
She says it also cleanses the liver and is a good treatment for kidney and stones. I mean, it's an amazing, the power of lactofermentation continues to just, even as I read it after this long, it continues to stun me that here's a product, beets, that very rarely we actually buy and eat, because I don't know why we don't eat them as often, but here they are, loaded with nutrients. They're a blood tonic. They alkalize the blood. They cleanse the liver.
Okay, but now what does alkalizing the blood do?
Well, I'm not sure. It brings the pH down, doesn't it, for Blair?
Well, alkalinity is a higher pH, and acidity is a lower pH, but I can't talk to that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's fine. We don't always have to have all the answers. We can just look them up.
Yeah.
Somebody else who knows.
On Nourishment Magazine, it's an online magazine. Sally Fallon writes an article about that just this month. So
right.
You might want to
about alkalizing the blood. Nourishing. Okay, let's find out what this magazine is. Nourishment Magazine?
Nourishment Magazine. It's out of Australia, a Weston A. Price Foundation chapter.
Yeah, it's
leader.
Nourished. N-O-U-R-I-S-T-D. Nourished Magazine.
Oh. Okay, how do you get it?
It's online, and Sally Fallon's article is on it. And
I mean, is it nourished.com or
nourished? Nourishedmagazine.com. I think it's .au, and I think that a lady that's on this panel tonight, Christine Rott from Oklahoma, may have that website that she can tell us about when she's able to talk.
I'm looking it up right now. If you just Google Nourished Magazine,
okay,
it's the first thing that comes up.
Right.
Oh, okay, so we can find it that way. Okay. Is Christine with us then, or do I need to have her unmute herself? I guess she's not with us. Okay, well I'm going to open
Oklahoma.
What's that?
I heard Oklahoma check in.
Okay, well, I muted out all the background noise, so she doesn't
The
code. She's not with us yet. I'm going to, audience, open it up to questions here from you all here in a minute, but I wanted to go through some of the basics here and ask just a few of the questions that were sent to me ahead of our discussion. And by the way, if you do have some questions, you can go ahead and email me at urbanhome@tds.net, and we'll try to get them in. And in a few minutes, I'll go ahead and adjust the settings so that you can unmute yourselves and ask questions, because some people prefer that. Now, I'm going to move on to some of the questions that were emailed to me earlier today, Maria, and try to move through these as quickly as we can. This lady says, I use Rejuvelac instead of whey to soak grains, beans, and fermented veggies because she doesn't like the taste of lemon juice or vinegar in her rice. I don't know what Rejuvelac is. She wants to know if she can use it. What is it?
That's a good question. Rejuvelac is the water that has sprouted wheat grains in it, and it's delicious, and it's a wonderful, it really is a good name for it because it gives you energy, you feel rejuvenated, and I love the stuff. But
is it soaking wheat?
Yeah, you sprout wheat grain in it, and the water, first you soak the wheat grains, you pour off water, and then when the grains start sprouting, you fill up the jar with water, and you let it sit for 24 hours. Then you pour the water off, and you can either drink it right away or decant it. And
okay, so that water that comes off of the sprouted wheat after 24 hours is called Rejuvelac.
Right, and it's full of that vital energy that that you get from growing things.
Okay.
And it really is a wonderful drink. But as far as soaking with it, I know... it sounds like a good idea as far as the phytase, the enzyme that would neutralize the phytic acid, would be in that water, but you wouldn't have any, the low acidity is not there, and none of the lactofermentation is there. So I would be cautious unless you had something to, maybe a lot of salt along with it, or something to inhibit the growth of bad bacteria. Grains you have to be careful with because they do carry some bacteria. And I would want something more acidic to soak with. Okay.
And as far as the vinegar or the lemon, you know, I soak beans with either vinegar or lemon whenever I've done that before. And just before you just throw away that water that they've been sitting in that has, you know, vinegar in it, and it takes it away, so you're still not tasting vinegar or lemon.
What a good, simple idea, because I didn't really like the taste of vinegar or lemon in my rice. So just throw out that water and put it clean.
Right.
Yeah, you can even rinse it off.
Yeah, rinse it off completely.
Okay, that's a great idea. Okay, we forgot to mention kombucha, which is another wonderful health beverage that you demonstrate in the DVD also. Can we talk a little bit about some health benefits from that? Is it loaded with lactic acid, too?
Oh, it's just a tremendously powerful drink, and this is the one that GT Blair, the man that finally brought it into the market.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he's
the original one,
but he's got a great business going now.
Yeah, he's got a huge business going now. But his mother was, the story behind that was his mother was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And he just started giving her massive amounts of kombucha, I guess. And it turned her around so that they could treat her, and she was alive and well. And that's what propelled him to start that little company. But kombucha is very old, and it is loaded with a lot of nutrients. And the main thing about kombucha is that people have been somewhat afraid because, you know, of the mold. You know, they don't. But you shouldn't eat anything that has mold in it at all. So the little booklet talks in detail about how to make it, as you know, the making of the kombucha, the methodology. It talks about the fermentation in air, and it would be hard to...
You have to see the DVD.
You'd have to see it. It talks about the kombucha mushrooms, the actual culture themselves, and I try to show the literal culture there. It talks about the fact that the sugar goes away. You know, we don't have the sugar when it's all over.
Okay.
And so these are things that are in the booklet. It talks about how you handle the little kombucha mushroom. And I think that was another question that someone asked. Well, how do I get, you know, what do I do? How do I pick it up if you're not supposed to use metal? Well, I use my hands. I use very clean, and I show that in the DVD about using very clean hands, but I don't mind touching it. And it talks about how do you know when it's done? You know, what do you use? And we use a straw to kind of see if it's done. And it even goes further to type out tea selection, what teas, and the heating panel. So that section of the DVD, I'm showing it, but the booklet becomes very descriptive about all of those things. And thanks to Blair, we came up, I think, with most of the questions answered on the kombucha thing.
Okay, well, here's one question that I don't think was answered, and that is, can you freeze the kombucha mushroom or kefir grains?
You know, I have read that you can freeze I've never heard that you can freeze the kombucha. The kefir grains can be frozen, but there is a special process. I think you have to use, like, two bottles, and you bring the temperature down, but they can only be frozen for, I believe I read that it was like about maximum of a month.
Wow.
And then they have to be brought out.
Okay. All right. Boy, I'm running out of time and lots of questions there. Okay, let me just move ahead. Do you know, this person writes in, now I know you're not doctors or anything, but she says she's got recurrent thrush and doctors are trying to build her immune system. And so would you say that, you know, all of these principles that we're talking about are going to build, is, you know, improving digestion going to build the immune system?
Oh, I just can't imagine that the lactofermentation wouldn't have an effect on it, but I can't say that it would cure the thrush, you know.
I think absolutely. The first thing that comes to mind is kefir.
Yeah.
And, you know, the probiotics in there, they will definitely help. I'm not a doctor, so
okay.
But that's my opinion.
Okay. Now, let's see. That question I think we covered. People want to know if they can't get raw milk locally, what they should do.
Look for pasteurized milk from grass-fed cows. Get full-fat milk, not low-fat milk. Low-fat milk and a lot of yogurts have powdered milk in them, and powdered milk is nothing but oxidized cholesterol. You do not want that. You want full-fat, whole milk, preferably from grass-fed cows. You don't want homogenized if you can avoid it. Most minimal amount of processing possible.
Okay,
that means just pasteurized to, you know, 130 degrees.
Okay.
And no more. Not ultra high temperature pasteurized.
And never use ultra pasteurized milk.
Right. Yeah, the UHT, you'll see that UHT pasteurized, that you don't want that.
Okay. Well, and you also mentioned to me that Brown Cow is a good brand of yogurt. There's probably some others.
Brown Cow is popular. Gosh, I wish I'd had that because I would have looked them up. I usually get Brown Cow. Nancy's. Stonyfield is good, although I've heard lately that Stonyfield is adding an ingredient that is not necessarily, it's just questionable. We don't know if it's really good or not. It's a thing that's supposed to help probiotic growth in the intestine. Does anybody know what that is? Maria, do you?
I've read the bad press on Stonyfield lately, and I've been wondering about that and need to do more study on it.
Okay. So
yeah.
Somebody in the audience might know about that.
Okay. All right. And then I have just one more here about, do you ladies know the difference between Sucanat and Rapadura?
You know, okay, that's
go ahead, Blair.
If I remember correctly, the last I read is that Sucanat is now okay. It used to be more highly processed, but I think the company has changed hands and they've come clean and they're doing minimal amount of processing. I know that Rapadura is preferred.
Okay.
You can see it in the color. There's obviously more minerals in there because it's darker.
Darker in color. Okay. So, yeah, color would certainly be a key. All right. And one other question somebody emailed me is how long will whey last in the refrigerator?
I've never kept it for 6 months, but Sally Fallon says it keeps up to 6 months. I'm always running out of it.
It does get stronger and stronger as it sits, though, or sour.
And I got to say that I have had sauerkraut back in the back of the fridge for 6 months and never had a problem. So
wow,
I think that this stuff can last for a long time.
Yeah, okay. Again, let your nose be your guide. Okay, I'm going to take just a moment here to allow audience to ask questions. And so hang on, okay?
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay, we'll take a few audience questions if you have some more. And the way you unmute yourself is you push number 6. After you're done with your question, push number 6 again. I know that it's hard to know who to go first, but we'll just go ahead and try. Okay, and tell us who you'd like to ask your question to then.
I have a question, and I really, any of you would be very welcome to answer it. If you're making large quantities of bread at a time, how do you incorporate the ideas of rinsing and sprouting the grain? We grind our own grain, and
okay.
I'm just not sure how that all works. And
okay.
I have read Nourishing Traditions and Mrs. Mull's commentary, and maybe I just don't get it.
Okay. You know, I really wanted to not focus on bread tonight, and I'm sorry I didn't make that clear in my emails, because we have talked about that a ton, and I really wanted to focus on the lacto-fermentation, but this gives me a good opportunity to tell you that my next phone seminar will be about bread making, and we will talk more about the two-stage process. You're always welcome to give me a call if you have questions, or to email me privately offline, or, you know, online, okay? Because I know
sure,
that,
no
is
problem.
That okay? I just really didn't want to get into the two-stage process tonight and soaking grains too much anyway. Okay, next question.
I have a question.
Did you have another question?
No, I think that was another person.
Oh, okay.
I have a question.
Okay.
This is Amanda from Waco. My son is allergic to milk, to cow's milk, and we haven't gotten very far with goat's milk. Do you have any advice on getting stuff to ferment with?
Have you tried almond milk or rice milk?
He drinks rice milk now. I just didn't know if I could ferment something with it.
You know, you can. Have you heard of water kefir grains?
Mm-hmm.
May I comment on that?
Sure. Yes.
I'm Catherine from Bristol, Virginia. You can use milk kefir grains to ferment other, yeah, or to, you know, kefirize other things. You can use milk grains to do juices or rice milk or whatever, but the grains will not propagate. The milk grains won't propagate when you're using it with something else. But many kids that are lactose intolerant do pretty well on kefir.
He's actually allergic to the milk.
Okay, he's allergic to milk. Have you tried kefir? You could try kefirizing goat's milk.
You can kefir coconut water. That's supposed to be very good for children, especially. If you go to Donna Gates' website, the Body Ecology Diet, that's a good start for fermenting beverages.
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Betsy. I'm in Arizona. And I wanted to know about, I kind of have two questions, but the most important to me is the kombucha. Do you know if it's safe to use while you're nursing or pregnant? It's so powerful, I was afraid to use it in either of those conditions.
Yeah, are you immune compromised at all?
No.
Okay, if you're healthy, I would start very small amounts and drink lots of water with it. to build up gradually and watch for any negative reaction. But
what would be a negative reaction in a breastfed baby to kombucha? What would I be looking for? Just an allergic reaction?
I don't think the baby would have it before you did.
Okay.
I think that kombucha works on your immune system, but I would be very cautious, you know, build up very slowly.
I was
I made that mistake when I first, I just loved it so much. I was drinking 3 or 4 glasses a day and not drinking any water with it.
It has a detoxifying effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, the detox can be powerful.
Well, do you prefer kefir grains or kefir powder? I use the powder from Donna Gates, but I don't know which is better.
I think the grains are better, but I started out with Donna Gates' powder, too, and that's a perfectly good way to start. And if you don't know anybody and you're not in the network yet where you could get free grains, then that's a good way to go, but it's more expensive, you know.
Why do you think the grains are better? Because they're so reusable, or
They're reusable, but not only that, but they are Mother Nature's substance. Like I said in the beginning, that the strains of bacteria in that in kefir made with real grains haven't even been able to be identified. So they have things in them that are they're complete as nature made them, where anything else, powder of any kind or anything else, I believe just doesn't have the potency that the grains might have. Somebody else might disagree with it.
I still think it's a good product. It's a good product. It's better than nothing, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay. That brings up the question, what about the kefir in the grocery store? Does it have health benefits?
I wouldn't trust that.
I wouldn't either. If you look at the ingredients, it's really heavily sugared. There's just no comparison.
Okay.
Well, plus what they're doing now is they're genetically modifying bacteria. And some of those, I don't remember the brand names, but I've read, I keep on these, food industry newsletters, and they're real excited about all these things that they're creating in the laboratory, and I don't trust them.
Okay, I hear you on that.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
If you are wanting to, get into this and start, but you're a person that needs to go slow, what would be the order that you would recommend? Kefir first and then the lacto-fermented veggies or what?
Do you have raw milk?
Currently, I don't have raw milk, but starting this month, the gal is supposed to have raw goat's milk for me.
Yeah, I would say that... especially starting out with get some kefir grains and be ready for that. And whether it's goat milk makes beautiful kefir.
Mm-hmm.
And just go ahead and start with kefir and then start making your way. And then from there, just keep going.
Or even yogurt. I mean, goat yogurt is excellent, too.
Yes, it's also very good.
Okay, great.
Or you can kefir pasteurized milk. That's something I don't think that we've focused on. Anybody who doesn't have access to raw milk, certainly kefir the regular milk.
Well, that's what I've done. So I have a friend locally who is way farther ahead in all of this, into all this than I am, and she gave me some kefir grains, but I didn't have raw milk at the time, and so I've just been doing it with the pasteurized milk.
Well, that will greatly, greatly enhance all the vitamins and vitamin C, the B vitamins, the B vitamins increase something like 100 to 300 fold when you kefir.
Wow. Okay, wow.
So it's phenomenal health benefit.
Also, I was just going to comment about the question about if you could freeze kefir grains. I haven't done this myself, but my friend that does this, you were talking about all the processes. What she's found that she does, because she wants to have a backup of kefir in case something happens with her current grains and they go bad, she doesn't have to try to re-find a person. So she got a clean jar and put just a little bit of the kefir grains in there and poured milk on them, just like when you're going to make the kefir, and put it in the freezer. And she has messed up her other grains and had to pull them out, and she just set them out, and they thawed, and they worked fine, I guess. So.
And they took off fine. How long did she freeze them, do you know?
That part I don't remember, but I think it was probably more than a month because she doesn't usually mess up her grains.
Right. Well, I'm sure it's possible, and I just have never tried it. I try to keep mine away from the back and the bottom of the fridge because things tend to freeze back there.
Right.
And I just don't want to...
She doesn't ever put her kefir in the fridge with the grains in it. She puts it in the cupboard and then overnight or whatever, and then takes out, drains off the grains and puts fresh milk in for that, and then puts the what's already kefirized or whatever into the fridge. And she makes new kefir every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't know you did. She's the one that's been helping me, and I didn't know that you didn't have to do that.
No, I make a half a gallon a week.
So what do you eat?
I just store my grain. This is not the way to do it. The way to do it is on Maria's DVD, okay? but when you get lazy, you got all these ferments going. It's like, oh, you just sit there in the fridge, you know.
Please note that your conference will expire in
10
minutes.
Okay. I don't know if you all heard that. I heard it on my end. I didn't know we were out of time. We need to wrap up.
Can I mention one thing before we finish?
Yes.
Marilyn, this is Catherine Rudd in Oklahoma. I'm also the chapter leader.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
You all had mentioned about thrush. I want to tell you that I'm working with a lady right now who has a severe systemic yeast infection, and the kefir, raw milk, cow's milk, kefir, and beet kvass has been her saving grace.
Oh, okay. Good. Thank you.
So that's just, you know,
and
if you've got
much,
that.
How much is she taking a day? So
I told her just to drink it as often as she could.
As much kvass and as much kefir as she could handle.
Mostly kefir, and I told her to start easy with the kvass because it will, you know, it detox quickly. So
okay.
She's building up on that.
And how long has she been on it?
She's been on it now for about a month and a half, and she was in a situation where she was literally losing weight and in a very serious situation because the yeast is literally taking over her body. And that, the idea was to counterbalance it with all the probiotics in the kefir, and that was the first thing that she'd ever been able to eat that did not cause her to bloat up and blow up. So she was able to start eating food after that.
Wow.
Blood testimony.
And when your blood is alkaline, the yeast can't survive. So back to that alkaline.
Oh, okay.
And keeping the blood more alkaline.
Thank you. Well, ladies,
can we get the DVD?
Well, I wanted to ask that too.
Okay, I need to wrap up, and so I'm going to ask anybody who didn't ask a question yet, I apologize. Probably you could email those questions to me, and I'll get them on to Blair, to Maria, because we need to wrap up. Boy, I wasn't ready for this to be over yet. I had more questions too. And I wanted to thank Maria and tell people again how they can get her DVD. It's so worth it. And I know you'll be inspired to just try it. I mean, I had tried making crispy, we didn't even talk about crispy nuts. I tried those a bunch of times and they were always too soggy. And they seem dry, but Maria on the DVD says to let them go for a couple days, and when I let them go, they came out terrific, and everybody
did good.
So I want to thank you. I just was enjoying sitting back and listening to you all with your fascinating information and encouragement. I just want to thank you and let everybody know that you can purchase Maria's DVD out of my website. The name of the DVD is Cook Your Way to Wellness. And Maria, do you have, it's a basic demonstration for making some of the world's most nourishing foods, kefir being right there at the top. We've talked about it quite a bit. Do you have some wrap-up comments?
Nothing more except to say that that I hope that you do, you know, that if you do purchase it, that you truly give it all of those areas a try. The bone broth, the butter contains a Wolzen factor, as does raw milk. And if you're really seeking, again, to round out your wonderful diet, which I'm sure many of you are now doing, is really add this to it, because you'll notice an enormous benefit in energy.
I would agree. The beet kvass has been a godsend for me. And Blair, how about you? Did you have a wrap-up comment?
My comment would be that Maria's DVD will save you hours and hours of research. She, in a very simple, straightforward way, I think she's really charming. What, a 90-minute DVD can save you 6 months on all the chat boards and Google searches that you'll be making trying to figure out the answer to your question.
Well, and I say Maria's DVD is like having a Titus II woman in your kitchen, giving you the confidence to get started. I mean, and I tried all these things, but I really needed to see her DVD to have more confidence and to keep at it. And I know
she makes it so simple.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you haven't tried the beef jerky, that section is great. Please try it.
So, see, there's even more on the DVD than what we told you about. So, the DVD is Cook Your Way to Wellness. It's available at my website, urbanhomemaker.com. And I thank you all for joining us. I especially thank Maria Atwood and her friend Blair, both chapter leaders from Weston A. Price. And just thank you all for joining us. It's been terrific. Our next phone seminar will be February 15th, and we'll be talking more about whole grains. So thanks, ladies, for joining us, and have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Okay. Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.